Yeah, on Hey Amud Beis, towards the bottom. FYI, I had a couple of seconds last, seconds, came out almost the moment, like seconds, before Marv last night. So I was trying to look up the question that we were curious about, that I was curious about and tried to make you curious about. What's the story, according to Yehuda, remember, he's the one that holds that when it comes to Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash, an Amo is not six Tvachim, an Amo is five Tvachim. So what I was very curious about was what's the story with the Shiur Mechitza, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Because even if he'll say, as we'll see he does, that the Shiur of a Mechitza is really either learned out from here as well. Halacha L'Moshe Misina. It's Halacha L'Moshe Misina, according to Rabbi Yehuda. But what does he do with that whole limud from the Arun? Because according to him, the Arun comes out to be 8.5 Tvachim. And Shamayim Shamayim L'Hashem Wa'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. So I did find one sefer that addresses this issue, and that's called the Meroimei Sadeh. Meroimei Sadeh. Meroimei Sadeh is the Netziv. Ernotali Tzvi Yehuda from Berlin. So he asks this question. I have to look it up and see exactly how he deals with it. I tried pondering it in my head last night a little bit. I definitely don't have it clear yet. But FYI, you know, basically any question that we ask, if it's a good question, somebody's dealt with it in one way or another. So, if you're curious, we could try to come back to try to answer that question. So the Gemara said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to say that all these things, shiurin, measurements, amounts, chatzitzen, something to do with what's considered a chatzitza. Chatzitza means that when a person, man or woman, is going to the mikveh, so they are not allowed to have anything that separates between their skin and the water. So if it separates, it's called a chatzitza. I don't know what the article translation of that is, and the other Gemara has a funky translation.
Interposition.
So I'm just going to go with chatzitza. Hope you're okay with that. Whatever. But a chatzitza is something that separates between the skin, the body, and the water. Mechitzin and mechitza. So that's what we really care about in our context, is that according to Yehuda, mechitza is halach l'moshe misinai, so those are sarei tvachim. Our halachah l'moshe misinai, and that's how you know that the walls of the sukkah have to be 10 tvachim. The Gemara has a problem with that. The Gemara says, are you serious? Are you sure about that? That all of these things are halachah l'moshe misinai? And the Gemara begins with shi'urim. Shi'urim are really halachah l'moshe misinai? Shi'urim, deraisin in who? Shi'urim, from the Torah they are. Oh, that's how Yoda talks, but it's okay. Shi'urim are deraisa. Dichsev, as it's written in the pasuk, Eretz chito seira v'gefen v'te'ena v'rimoin Eretz is shemen u'dvash. That Eretz Yisrael is a place of wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, a land of olive oil and dvash, sweet things. It really means dates. The sweetness from the dates. So what does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with shiurim? V'amar Rav Chanan said, every item listed in this pasuk is listed for shi'urim. Take a look at Rashi, four lines up from the bottom. I mean, let's think about this for one second, right? That's like a funny thing to say, right? Do you think it's a funny thing or not funny thing to say? What do you mean? It's the shiurim. It's talking about the seven species of whatever things that are unique and special. They're called the shvach, the shell, the praise of Eretz Yisrael, right? Well, why in the world would you jump from that to saying, oh, no, well, that might be true or whatever, but it's teaching you some kind of shiur for something else in halacha. Where does that come from? I mean, is that obvious? Or that's like just, doesn't that strike you as a little unusual? No?
Well, it should.
I think it should. So Rashi, four lines up from the bottom. So the shiurim nemar. Hapasuk midaber b'shivacha shel Eretz Yisrael. Hapasuk is speaking in the praise of Eretz Yisrael. Now then Rashi adds something. You ready for this? Shafilu b'divrei Torah. That even when it comes to words of Torah, in Yonei Torah, tzrichin l'sha'er b'peirei seha isurin. We need to evaluate in its fruit the prohibitions of the Torah. I find this to be very interesting. That Rashi, how would you translate this Rashi? What's Rashi saying? Do you see it? Where the pasuk is speaking about the praise of Eretz Yisrael. I'm bringing you, a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, to a land. Of course, it's flowing with milk and honey. But it's a land of wheat and barley. It's a land of pomegranates. And everybody loves pomegranates because you put them in your salad and you bite them and they're sweet at first. And then you get little pieces stuck in your teeth for the rest of the day. Everyone loves pomegranates. Right? It's the shvach of Eretz Yisrael. So it's unbelievable. Rashi and Shafi, a little bit different Torah. Part of the praise of Eretz Yisrael is that even when it comes to Torah, so you have to evaluate Torah based on these items. That's the shvach of Eretz Yisrael. Can we just think about this for a minute? Think about the consequences that you wear our tums on the board. Remember? Translate, understand, mefarshim, so what? Let's do a so what for a minute. What is that shvach of Eretz Yisrael? What do you say? Part of the praise of Eretz Yisrael is what? How's Rashi learning? I'm waiting for some light bulbs to go on.
Is it that you could divide the Torah as common specific pieces of Eretz Yisrael? Or?
Right. In other words, it's
like
so
connected.
Yeah, it's so important. It's so critical that part of the praise of Eretz Yisrael, or part of what's so special. You have another idea to say? No? Part of the praise or the beauty of Eretz Yisrael is that it's intertwined to such an extent with Torah that the shiurim of Torah are derived from these things. I'll say it a little differently. Everybody knows, you know, the Ramban who says that, and it's really reflected in Rashi also, that when we say in V'hayayim Shamoya, that if you're doing the mitzvahs, you'll be in Eretz Yisrael. And if people are not listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not performing the mitzvahs, so then Avadat HaMeheira, you'll be thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. What's the very next pasuk? And where it's filling? What? You know what I'm talking about? Think back to this morning when you said Shema. And what did it say? So what happens? Geshe and Mata are everything be at the proper time. But Hishamru Lachem, Penyiftel Levavchem. Be very careful, lest your heart be swayed. Visartem Avaratem Alehim Achirim. And you go off the derech and you serve other masters. Vishtachavisamahem, and you bow down to them. You actually do behaviors based on that. Vicharaf Hashem Bachem. Hashem will get angry at you, will express anger at you. Vyotzaris Hashemayim will close up the heavens. Vilei and Mata won't be rain. And the ground won't give its produce. And you'll be chased out quickly from that good land that Hashem is giving you. The very next pasuk is, and place these words on your heart, on your soul, and put on tefillin. Why? What's the connection between the two? What's the connection between do the mitzvahs, you'll have everything you need. Don't do the mitzvahs, you'll have the galus, pun and tefillin. What's the connection? So I guess the easiest pshat is what? That hopefully by wearing tefillin, it'll prevent you from going off the derech. You're supposed to wear tefillin all day. So hopefully it's a reminder the whole day long. No? Anybody ever think about this? Rashi on the pasuk writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, and when you go into Galus, don't you think for a minute that mitzvahs don't apply. What? You gotta put on tefillin. You gotta do all the mitzvahs even when you're in Galus. Excuse me. Was there some sort of Hava Amina that you don't have to do mitzvahs when you're not in Eretz Yisrael? So the answer is yes. Apparently, there was a Hava Amina. There was a legitimate thought process that if you're not in Eretz Yisrael, so there's no point to mitzvahs.
Oh, right. Yeah.
How could that be?
Right. Is it? Yes.
How could that
I forgot.
What? No. How could that be? So Moshe Rabbeinu says it again and again in Devarim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing you to Eretz Yisrael. You're going to do the mitzvahs there. You're going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu there. You're going to build the Beis HaMikdash there. That's where Klal Yisrael is supposed to be. So maybe mitzvahs are for Eretz Yisrael.
Some people still think that.
So this is the pasuk that says not like that. That's what Rashi writes. That this pasuk is telling you that when you go into Galus, you got to put on tefillin. You have to keep the mitzvahs. Now, if you look at the rest of Rashi, Rashi has a very interesting angle on it, which the Ramban is famous for really bringing out, that it's almost like practice till you get back. That, you know, sometimes a person is sent into some kind of exile, or he's you know, wandering in the desert. You know, he goes into the forest, right? You have to go do something, you have to go find somebody, you have to whatever, but you want to make sure you find your way back. So you leave your breadcrumbs, which is the best way to get lost because the animals will eat them. But it's like putting out, you know, 10 pieces of bread for your bidikas chametz, and then your dog comes and eats them all, and then, right? That's never happened to you, right? So, but you want to have some kind of signpost, some kind of visual aid that you know that this is the way back. So anybody that ever, you know, you had to go someplace, you want to make sure you know how to get back. You're always making sure, okay, you look back and you say, okay, that's the building, that's the street, I remember the signpost. Like, you know, that's what you want to, you have certain things to keep in mind. That's what Rashi writes. Keeping mitzvahs and gullus are like the signposts, you know, so that we can make sure to get back. So what exactly does that mean? So at the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything. Our mitzvahs are the same, whatever exactly their role or function may be in on that level. We have a chiyuv to observe the mitzvahs because that's what it says in the Torah, whether we're in gullus or not. Is it because ideally we're supposed to be doing them in Eretz Yisrael? Yeah, okay. Does it mean it's just practice and it's only like derabbanan and you don't have to do the mitzvahs in chutz laretz?
No.
Not what it means. But it does mean that apparently it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different when we're in gullus than when we're properly living in Eretz Yisrael. Gemeir of Yamein. So there is a havamina, apparently, that mitzvahs are for Eretz Yisrael. Zakh Rashi! Eretz Yisrael is so intertwined with Torah that the fruits, the produce of Eretz Yisrael, themselves are the shiurim of the Torah. You hear? The chita, the se'ira, the gefen, the te'ena, the rima, the zeishemen, the dvash, they are the shiurim of the Torah. Because Eretz Yisrael and Torah are intertwined. They're connected. They can't be separated. There's still a chiyuv mitzvahs and chutz laretz. Right. But Eretz Yisrael and Torah are so connected that the shiurei ha-Torah, that's part of the shvach of Eretz Yisrael, that these are the special fruits, produce, whatever, of Eretz Yisrael that are the shiurei Torah. You can say that one over on Shabbos. That's a powerful idea, no? What a beautiful idea. Okay, in any case, so that's what it says, is that the shiurim are not halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, the Gemara suggests, but shiurim are actually d'oraisa, but they're stated in this pasuk not just to tell you that Eretz Yisrael's got nice pomegranates, but because to teach you the pomegranates are a shiur for the Torah. And these are special things that grow especially in Eretz Yisrael, in a special way or whatever. So the Gemara says, chita goes to each one. Chita, three lines on the bottom, wheat. The Bayis HaMenuga is a shiur for a house that has teras. This noun, as we learn in the Mishnah, Nichnas, the Bayis HaMenuga, one who enters a house that has teras, with Kalev HaKseifav, and his, what are Kalev here? Yeah, here means clothing. Sometimes a kli, but Kalev means his clothing, right? His clothing is on his shoulder. So he doesn't have to be naked, but it means to say that he has clothing on his shoulder. He's carrying clothing. And his shoes and his rings are in his hand, meaning he's not wearing them on his fingers, he's carrying them. Why is a guy wearing rings?
Wait, why would he be in the mikvah? Apparently why would he be carrying it in his hand?
What?
Why would he be carrying it in his hand if he's in the mikvah?
No mikvah. He's going into a house, he's walking into a house, and these items he happens to be carrying. Doesn't really matter why he's carrying them. The point is, he's not wearing. These are things that normally could be worn. In this particular scenario, he's carrying them in. That's all. Hu v'hein tmei miyad. He and the things he's carrying are tamei immediately, because he walked into a house that has saras and the house has tuma. So he becomes tamei, and everything he's carrying becomes tamei at the same time, right away. But If those clothing were not things he was carrying, but he was wearing, he's wearing those clothes, his clothes. Misandav, and his shoes, Baragav, are on his feet. Vithab Oisav, and his rings, Behatzab Oisav, are on his fingers. He's actually wearing them. So then it's different. Hu Tameh Miyad, he becomes Tameh the same as soon as he walked immediately. Miyad means immediately. As soon as he enters the house. Vehain, and they, these items, Tahirim, are Tahor. Ad Sheyish He, until he tarries, until he delays, b'kidei, in the amount of time, achilas pras, that it would take him to eat a pras. A pras means half a loaf of bread. Kidei achilas pras is a shiur of Torah that comes up again and again and again. Kidei achilas pras. So here it comes up in terms of how long he needs to be standing or waiting in this house. He didn't just walk in and walk out. He walked in and he was there for at least the amount of time it would take to eat a half a loaf of bread. Pas chitin v'le pas se'oirin. And it's specifically a wheat bread and not, for example, a barley bread. Why? What's the difference in wheat and barley? Yeah, apparently. So Rashi writes, pas chitin shehiyasa mu'etes mishal se'oirin. Apparently, it's easier to chew or consume or whatever. It's a little bit faster. So you can, it's a lesser shit, it's a chumra. So it's a less amount of time for him to be waiting in the house to become tamei. Okay, so just in terms of the halacha, so we'll finish it up. Mesev oich b'liftan. Mesev is la haseva, is what? You know what haseva is? Like on Pesach, haseva? What?
Leaning.
So that's how they used to sit. But oich b'liftan, and eat them. Liftan means with like a filler. So if people are eating. All right.
It's like they go alongside.
Yeah, in other words, it's not just the bread, it's along with right, something else. So Rashi says, what's the idea? Mesev dehainu derech achila, meaning he's eating it in a normal way of eating. Mishu mesev hu osu ba'achila, the person who's leaning is involved in eating. Reino tarud b'dvarim achirim, he's not involved in other things. So the way that Rashi learns this is that it's part of a chumrah. And if a person is not sitting down to eat, it means he's hanging out with his friends and he's snacking, you know? So it's going to take a lot longer to eat it than if he's sitting down and he's focused on eating. I mean, really not supposed to be talking when you're eating because, you know, chas v'shalom, person could choke. So it's less of an amount of time. Fine. Anyway, that's shiur number one, the chita. The chita is not the size of the wheat kernel. It's pretty abstract when you think about it, right? It's not like, oh, when you think of wheat kernels, you think of, you know, a half a loaf of wheat bread. Okay, but it's at least a remez to this shiur for how long a person needs to be in a bayis hamanuga before his clothing that he's wearing becomes tamei. That's number one. Se'ira, what's the remez? What's the indication of the shiur of barley? Tisnanas, we learn in the Mishnah, etzem kis se'ira matami b'maga b'masav e'ena matami b'oyel. Translation. Etzem. What's an etzem? A bone. Kis se'ira, the size of a barley. Metame b'maga creates tumma with maga. What's maga?
Touch,
like negia, right? With contact, b'masa. What's masa?
Carrying.
What's tumma by carrying? Contact. We get it. You touch it. What's tumma of carrying? You're carrying. You're touching it, aren't you?
Bringing it into different areas.
But if you're carrying it, you're touching it, no? Right, because you're carrying it but not touching it directly. So theoretically, you could have a tumah on top of a whole pile of who knows what you're carrying. You've got 100 pillows you're carrying, and there's, you know, an etzem kisaira on the top of the pile over here. But you're carrying it. It doesn't make a difference. You're not contacting it directly. So etzem kisaira, if you have a bone the size of a barley, does create tumah, will give tumah to the person that touches it, and will also give tumah to a person that carries it, even though he's not what? Touching it directly. But a bone that size will not create tumah, but oihel. What's tumas oihel? Who can spell it out for me? What's tumas oihel? What's an oihel, literally?
A
tent. So what's tumas oihel?
The impurities of the
tent. Right. So what does that mean?
When
who? When what's in the tent?
When he brings impurities, and if he's carrying impurities and in the tent, then the tent.
A dead body.
Yeah.
When a dead body is under a roof, then the tumah spreads wherever that roof goes. That's the big issue with hospitals.
It's not a physical, like visible.
No, it's tumah. Tumah is not something that you can really. Well, it's the reality, but it's a spiritual reality. It's just like waves and things that we don't generally pick up unless you have the right vessels, right, kelim, to be able to pick it up. It's the same thing over here. There's a tumas oil. So a bone that's a barley, the size of a barley, is not enough to create tumas oil. What would be enough to create tumas oil, by the way? Take a look at Rashi. Etzem kisa oira, Rashi points out mina mace. We're talking about from a dead human body. Ve'enu metame ba'oihel, kishi or zen. It doesn't create tumas oihel, tumah that spreads under a roof, in this amount. Ad she'e shidra, you know what a shidra is? It means a spine. Until there's like a whole spine. A gulgoles, or a skull, comes from the word galgal. Galgal is like a circle. Gulgoles. Heads will roll. You know what I mean? Anyway. Or a full skull, shlema. A roiv minyan evar yadam. Or most of a person's bones. So either it's a full spine, a full skull, or most of the bones. That will create tumas oihel. But anything less than that will not create tumas oihel, but will give over tuma with contact. And what's the other one? Mago and maso, which means carrying. Mago is touch, and maso is carrying. Okay, next. Geffen. What's the shiur for the vine, the grape vine? K'dei revias yayin l'nazir. And as much as a revias of wine for a nazir. Now, what does this mean? So Ari and I spent some time on this one in Seder. It's not as simple as it sounds. So let's go through it. Revias yayin. What's a revias? Let's start with that. Literally means a fourth. A fourth of what? A revias is a revias of the measurement called a lug. So it's a fourth of a lug. So, okay, practically speaking, so we can picture it in our minds, what would we call the liquid amount of a revias bismanazet? So this is a machlokes. It's somewhere between, let's say, 3.3 ounces and 5 ounces, somewhere around that. So picture your typical Kiddush cup Friday night. Most typical Kiddush cups hold approximately 5 ounces. The smaller ones will be a little bit smaller. But your typical Kiddush cup you see on Shabbos, most of them hold about 5 ounces of wine. So that would be the chumr de kashir. That's the shir de Chazon Ish for how much would be a revias. It could be less than that. It could be 3.3 ounces. Okay. Whenever the Torah tells us that a person is not allowed to drink something, there's some sort of prohibition of liquids, so the shiur for liquids of consumption is a revias. So for example, in mitzvah of Kiddush, even though the wine itself is derabanan, but how much are you supposed to drink? How much is a kos supposed to be? A revias. So that's why we have our kos. Anywhere between 3.3 and 5 ounces to be able to the mitzvah of Kiddush. Good? So here, I'll ask you, well, a nazir is not allowed to drink wine. Well, how much wine is he not allowed to drink? So you'll say, well, to fully violate the prohibition here, he'll have to drink a revias. Now, let me ask you a quick question just so we're all on the same page. Pig. Not allowed to eat pig. How much pig does a person have to eat before he actually gets punished? What's eating pig, technically? Nope. Nope. Kazayas. The shiurim of consumption of solids, in kol hatar kula, unless there are certain exceptions, we'll get to it with Yom Kippur in a minute, with certain exceptions, is kazayas. How much is a kazayas? I don't know, big olive, a really big olive. I don't know, they're shrinking, we're shrinking, we're getting bigger, I don't know, whatever it is, but whatever exactly the shear of a kazayas is exactly. You guys ever shared the kazayas book? Feldheim, I think, publishes it? There's a book that they came out with that has all of these shear of kazayas and kibitza, the size of an egg, and like all these different kinds of foods. So next time somebody says, how many of those snacker crackers you gotta eat at a kiddush? You know, it could be, it's a kiddush b'makom m'su'uda. So you can take a look over there, whatever they say, you know? But there is a picture book that has actual full-size pictures you can see, like what exactly is it, because that is very much halacha l'maaseh. So you should all get a hold of it. It's a great safer to have. So solids go by kizayas. So let's say a person says, great, so I'd always wanted to taste pig. I'll just have a little bit and a little bit of a taste. I'll just have a little bit of pig. Is that mutter? So the answer is no. It's not mutter, but a person will not get malchus, lashes, will not get malchus for less than a kazayas. Good? So the shear for malchus is a kazayas, but a person's not allowed to eat less than that. That has a technical term. We call that the iser of, anybody know? Chatzi shear. It's called chatzi shear. Chatzi shear is also aser. A machlokas and the Gemara of Chatzishir is asr de oraisa, or if it's asr de rabbanan. So, either way, it's prohibited. Now, we're talking about a nazir, I thought, drinking a revius of wine. So if I'll ask you, well, how much is the nazir not allowed to drink? You'll say, well, truth is, Rabbi Chatzishir, you just told me, so he's not allowed to drink any wine. And you'd, of course, be right. But how much before he's chayav achatas, how much before there are real consequences for him? The answer is, a revius. But that's true in Kol Jaragula. Like, what does that have to do with the gefen in this pasuk? So what the Gemara is saying here, and Rashi spells it out, if you want to go through the Rashi, but I'll just tell you two outside for now. Don't get confused. The shear that we're talking about here, also don't get distracted by your phones also, which you shouldn't have. The shear here is not a shear for how much a nazir needs to drink. Why not? Because everybody knows that. That's a rule in Kol HaTorah Kula. This pasuk is talking about shiurim that you wouldn't have known otherwise. Are you with me on that point? This pasuk is not talking about kizayis. Kizayis is everything. Like in the Gemara, well, we'll see in a minute. The Gemara does say kizayis, right? Isn't zayis? So we'll see what the Gemara does in a minute. We'll see Rashi in a minute. But what this pasuk really is saying is that the shiurim that you wouldn't have known otherwise, we're going to learn out from this pasuk. But everybody knows that liquids are berevius. So Rashi writes, don't get confused. Gefen has several elements to it. What can you consume from a gefen, from a grape vine? Well, obviously the grapes. Grapes can produce wine. What about grape peels? You can use grape peels also in all kinds of foods and all kinds of recipes or whatever it is.
Grape jam.
You can make it into jam. What about the seeds? Seeds also have a certain flavor to them. And the truth is, if you get enough grape seeds and you soak them in water long enough, you can make a vinegar out of it.
Let's have grape seed oil
now. Grape seed oil. What about the leaves? You go to a fancy restaurant, and you got things wrapped in grape leaves. Right? No?
Yeah.
You guys don't eat out enough, apparently. I never do. Anyway, so all kinds of things that come from the grapevine you can eat. So Rashi points out, because there's an opinion in Nazir, that a Nazir is going to be chayav for consuming all of those things. It's not just the grapes, it's also the peel, the seeds, leaves and shoots and whatever. Whatever is edible from the grapevine. Now I'm going to ask you, well, how much does a nazir have to eat of those solids before he really suffers any consequences? So what did we just finish saying? In Kol HaTorah Kula, the amount for solids of pig is what? Kizayis. That's the finish over here, Sajash. These things that come from the grapevine are not evaluated by kizayis. They're evaluated by... What does the Gemara say? Gefen. What does it say? By Revius. So the consumption of those solids, you have to figure out how much is a violation once he consumes a Revius of them. Now, what's the obvious question you're going to ask me now? How do you evaluate solids based on a liquid shear? Do you hear the question? Did we hear the question? How do you evaluate the consumption of solids based on a liquid shear? So what's the answer, you scientists out there?
Volume.
Can you try to melt it? Volume.
Density.
How do you evaluate that practically in the times of Chazal? What's the easiest way to do it? I mean, how do you do it in the lab?
Weight.
So how do you do it? Not the weight, right? You have to displace it. Well, I can give it away. Displacement, right? Displacement of liquid. What do you mean displacement of liquid? So that's right. So once you drop enough solid into this liquid that it has displaced the amount of a revius, that means that the volume of that item is a revius. Then we'll follow that?
Say it again.
That when you want to know a solid, how it compares to the liquid, what's really going on here, is we're trying to get at the volume, how much space it occupies, however you want to say it, I think the scientists say it better for me, but how much space it occupies, the volume of it, the way you figure that out is by putting it into a liquid. And once it displaces from the cup that amount of liquid that we're talking about, that's the equal. So if you take an egg and you put it in, because it'll sink a little bit better than other things, like grape leaves, they don't sink. But in any case, once you get that in, it displaces a certain amount of water. So however much water it displaces from the cup is the volume of that egg. And you have a liquid amount for the volume of the solid. So that's what Rashi writes. It's the same thing going on over here. What's the story at the end of the day? that if you want to know how much before Nazir it really has consequences for his eating of those solids from the grapevine, is once he consumes a revius of wine. That's the second rule. Number one is that it's a liquid amount for a solid. And number two, that the way to evaluate it in the displacement is not with water, but with wine. Why? What's the difference between water and wine in terms of displacement?
It's denser.
Yeah, the viscosity. That's how Rashi says it. The viscosity of wine is very different than water, because water is going to overflow. But wine actually is its viscosity is sufficient enough to allow it to pile up on top of the cup, and it's a little bit harder to displace it than water. So that's what the Gemara is really saying. That's a long Rashi, but that's what the Gemara is really saying. So when the Gemara says that Geffen is Kidei Revius Yayin LeNazir, it doesn't mean, says Rashi, that a Nazir that drinks a Revius of wine has ruined himself and is Chayav Karban. It means to say that that's the amount of displacement for any solid that comes from the vine for a Nazir. Good? Okay, yeah. Te'ena, what about a fig? Kigregeres Leitzas Shabbos. Is a dried fig for Hoitzah on Shabbos. Okay, dried fig. Number one means that like the raisins, so this is the raisin version of a fig, right? A dried fig. Dried fruit, right? So it's dried up. That's a smaller shear, obviously, than a fig starts off with when it's not dried out. That's number one. And number two, what's it a shear for? Hoitzah on Shabbos. Okay, this is a little tricky. What do you mean Hoitzah on Shabbos? So there are two types of Hoitzah on Shabbos. There's going from one Rishus to another Rishus, meaning Rishus the Yachad, Rishus Rabim, or vice versa. And there's another form of Hoitzah on Shabbos, anybody know? Carrying something Dalet Amis in the Rishus Rabim. So you can go from one Rishus to another is violation, and there's also violation to walk, to carry something more than Dalet Amis on Shabbos. Okay, either way, how much? How much? A little speck of something is going to be Hoitzah on Shabbos? So the answer is it has to have some significance to it. If it's a vessel of some sort, then it's not going to go by this shear. This shear is telling us that at least there's some sort of utility to it. It's worth something. So if it's a vessel, it's going to have all kinds of different shearing based on what that vessel does. But when you're talking about food, hoitzah of food goes by this shear of gregeres, a dried fig. Good? So if you want to know how much you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos before a person violates, the answer is the shiur for Hoitzah is a dried fig. Remind, pomegranate. Disnan, as we learn in the Mishnah, called klei balabatim, shiur and krimoinim. All vessels of a homeowner, they're evaluated based on pomegranates. What does that mean? It means like this. If a person has, let's say, an earthenware klei at home, and it becomes tamei, you know what you do with it? How do you get out of that? You know how you get out of the tumah?
Make a whole
size of pomegranate. The answer is you're a little stuck, right? Because you have to break it. You can't make an earthenware vessel tohor again. It just doesn't work. Sorry. So you're finished. Now, when is something considered broken? Let's say, imagine that you have a glass or some sort of container that you use for liquids, and it gets cracked in it. It gets a little hole in it. Well, it's useless to you now, right? So nowadays we're so rich that that's probably true. But in times of Chazal, it certainly was not true. Because nobody wanted to just waste things that they had because they were hard to get, hard to remake, hard to pay for, hard to expensive. So what people used to do was they would just use it for other things. So if they had some sort of liquid container and it got a crack, it got a hole in it, they would use it for something bigger that would be able to stay inside. So when does a kli of a homeowner cease to be a kli in its totality, completely, when the hole is so big that guess what's going to fall out? What are we up to? Rimonim. Pomegranates. Pomegranates were, I guess, the biggest thing, and generally people kept in containers at home. So once the pomegranate would fall out, then it's not a kli. That's too big of a hole. That's really broken completely. But until that point, it is still considered a kli because you can always put pomegranates in it. Always has a utility, and therefore in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, so it is still considered a kli. Eretz Zeis Shemen, a land that is filled with olive oil. Eretz Shekol Shi'ureha Kizesem. It means it's a land where all of its shi'urim Cool by olives. Gemara asks, Kol shiureh asal kadaitach. All of its shiurim that occurs to your mind, arises in your mind. Hayika hani damrinan. But there are these that we just finished talking about. Right? Obviously, all the shurim are not b'kazayis, but we just finished talking about all these ones that are not b'kazayis. Ella, Emo, rather say, Sharoiv shurim kazayisim. Most of its shurim are with olives. Now, again, same thing with the Revias that we said before. So I would have said, based on a simple reading of the Gemara, that it means that any solid is a kazayis. Take a look at Rashi. Rove at Shirea Kezesim is four lines down in the wide lines in the bottom. Look at what Rashi lists. I would have listed food. Pig, I don't know, whatever you have to eat, corn, I don't know, whatever you have to eat. I would have listed food. Rashi lists mace, dead body, nevela, v'isser, chelev v'dam, pigul, noisar, tame, v'gidonashas. He has certain consumptions over there, but they're all interesting ones. Rashi didn't give the basic ones. No, the shiurim, you wouldn't necessarily know. Fat. Is fat a solid or is fat a liquid? Depends how congealed it is. Blood can become congealed, but it's also a liquid. So what are the shiurim by all of these things? The answer is, the default shiur is kazayas. What if it's a food? Well, of course it's a kazayas. Everybody knows that. You with me on that point? So that's a proof for me that this pasuk is not discussing mainstream shiurim. It's discussing chidushin in shiurim. You with me on that point? You know what I'm trying to say? That this pasuk is not talking about mainstream shiurim that everybody already knows. It's not talking about kazayas to be yotze matzah. It's talking about chidushin, things you wouldn't necessarily know. So that's the chiddush of zeis shemen, is that if you don't know the shiur, most likely it's a kazayas. Not because it's a food that you're eating, but because most of the shiurei Torah are kazayas, nonetheless. Dvash, what is the date? What is that one referred to? Kikosev sagasam yom kippurim. The shear is a fat date on Yom Kippur. What do you mean a fat date on Yom Kippur? So the basic gist is that on Yom Kippur, even though a person is not allowed to eat, and eating is usually evaluated with what? Kazayas. On Yom Kippur, a person is actually not in violation of Yom Kippur with kazayas. He's in violation of Yom Kippur when he eats a larger amount, which is called kaseves agasa, a fat date. Why? Why is it different on Yom Kippur than any other time? Does anybody know?
Because there are reasons why a person is allowed to eat on Yom Kippur.
Right. So where does all of that come from? What's the prohibition based on Yom Kippur? Eating? No. It's based on more of a satiation type of idea. That when a person becomes a little, in other words, the problem is the pasuk says that you have to fast, you have to suffer. You have to suffer on Yom Kippur. So a person that eats a kazayas isn't necessarily taking away that suffering. If he eats a little bit more than that, this is the shir, chazasa, the shir, according to this, is the kazayas agasa, that fat date, that already settles his mind a little bit. So he's not chayav on Yom Kippur until he eats that amount. It's an exception to the general rule because the rule is not, you know, it's not the prohibition of Yom Kippur is not eating. Prohibition of Yom Kippur is that there's a chiyuv to cause yourself suffering, to fast. And this, you're not in violation of that until a person consumes a kaseves agasa. So that's why we have all kinds of ways that if a person actually needs to eat, we allow them to eat in a way where they're never in violation of this. Okay. Alma, that's the end of this whole brisa. We quoted, we were done with our whole quote over here. We went through all of the shiurim. What was the whole point of all of this? The whole point was to show that shiurim are not halacha l'moshe in Sinai. Shiurim are a pasuk in the Torah. We just went through them. Alma, you see from here, deraisa ninhu. The deraisa they are. Vitispera? You think so? You reason so? You think so? Shiurim miksive. Shiurim, who writes anything about that? In other words, we just listed a whole bunch of fruits, a bunch of produce. It doesn't actually say anything about shiurim. They're making a very interesting jump from what the pasuk actually talks about. Ella, rather, hilchasa ninhu. Hilchasa means halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It's a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Rather, hilchasa ninhu, halacha l'moshe m'sinai, they are v'kra, and the pasuk that we just went through, asmachta ba'alma hu. Asmachta comes from the word samuch, like smicha, means closer, to lean up against. That's why when a rabbi gets smicha, why is it called smicha? Because you lean up against him. You're relying on him. Smicha means that he is reliable. He's lean-onable. So here, asmachta means we lean it on the pasuk. We pin it on the pasuk. That it's not that the pasuk is really saying that. It's just that we pin it on the pasuk because we can see all these shiurim in the pasuk. But it's not the main message of the pasuk, and therefore it's not really a de'oraisa. It's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, but you can see it. There's a hint to it in the pasuk. That's called an asmachta. There are really two ways to learn an asmachta. The way I just told you, that it's really just like a hint to it, that's one way to learn. Others suggest that asmachta actually means it really is in the pasuk, but it's not the main message, so you know it's hard to say that's really a de'oraisa. But it's really hinted to. It really is hinted to. It's not just there that later on we came and we say, oh, that's a good way to remember it. But those are two different ways to learn asmachta. Then the Gemara says, Chatzitzin der Reisen in who? How could you say that Chatzitza is Allah Chalamosha Misinai Chatzitzin, meaning a separation between the skin and the water, Remikveh, that's der Reisa! How do you know it's der Reisa? Dichsiv, as it says in the Pasuk, Berachatz Besar B'mayim, that a person that has to go to the mikveh has to wash his flesh in water. Well, guess what? If there's something blocking his flesh, he's not washing his flesh in the water. So obviously, the pasuk is saying right away that anything which prevents his flesh from being rinsed, being washed by the mikveh water, is no good. Doesn't work. Shelo yehei davar, there should not be anything chaitzeitz separating beino, between him, meaning his flesh, but beino mayim and the water. So Gemara says, you win. Ki asai hilchasa, when the halacha mishmei Sinai, what's the halacha mishmei Sinai telling you? Obviously not that, because that the pasuk says. Halacha Moshe Sinai is telling you the sarot for hair. Kidi Rabba Barachana, like Rabba Barachana, Dam Rabba Barachana, Nima Achas Keshura, Nima means a hair. One hair, Keshura, Kesher, that's tied, that's knotted, Chitzetzes, is a chatzitza. So let's say you have a woman, she goes to the mikveh and she has one hair totally tied in a knot. Apparently that's a problem. Shalish, we'll see that it's not really a problem to erase it, but that's what the Gemara starts off talking. There's a concept of chatzitza, but even one hair in a knot, but it's going to have to be a lot more than that. But shalish, if it's three hairs in one knot, einan chaitzitzitz, that's not going to be considered a chatzitza. Just from a practical perspective, a person takes one long hair, ties it in a knot, that knot will very, very well could stay very fast. But if it's three hairs in a knot, it's not going to be a very tight knot. Shtayim, what about two hairs in a knot? Any idea? I don't know. That's what Rabbi Baruch Hanna said. Gemara says, oh, so that's halacha mishmei Sinai is a hair. What? Sarinami deraisin inu. Hair also deraisa they are. Dichsiv, as it says in the pasuk, viruchas, viruchats, es bisaroi b'mayim. It could have said viruchats bisaroi. It adds the word es. S has no real translation, right? We all know that, right? S has no translation. So why do you need it at all? So sometimes the Torah puts it in, sometimes the Torah leaves it out. That means that it's not, that when it is there, it very well may be there for a drasha. So why is it here? You have to wash S your flesh in the water. What? It sounds like there's something in addition to your flesh that the water has to contact. Es a tofel ulasaroi, that which is secondary to your flesh, umainu, and what is it? Se'aroi, his hair. So again, so this pasuk in the Torah is telling us that not only does the water have to touch his flesh, it also has to touch the thing that's secondary to his flesh, that's attached to his flesh, which is hair. So the Gemara says, so what in the world is halacha moshe mi-Sinai of chatzitza now? It doesn't apply to the skin, it doesn't apply to the hair. So what's a chatzitza that you need halacha moshe mi-Sinai for? The pasuk is telling you, you can't have a chatzitza on the body or on the hair. So what's the talk about? Ki asai hilchasa, when comes the halacha moshe mi-Sinai, what does it teach you that I don't know already? Look at the Rabbi Yitzchak, for that which Rabbi Yitzchak said. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Dvar Torah, according to the Torah, meaning on the deraisa level, Ruboy umakvid alav chaitzeitz. If something is covering most of him, Umakpid alav, and he doesn't want it there. Makpid is particular. Right? English is a pretty good translation. And he's particular about it. He doesn't want it there. Chaitetz, separates. V'she'eino makpid alav. But even if this item, this thing, is covering most of that part of the body, or most of his body, and he's not makpid, he doesn't care. Maybe he even wants it there. Eino chaitetz, then it is not a separation. Can we focus for like another 5 minutes or we're finished? Yeah? Yeah? What do you think? You ready? We're going to finish with this. So, as I say, hold cup for 1 more minute. 5 more minutes. We'll finish with this. When it comes to chatzitzos, so you have a woman, she wants to be back with her husband. So she has to go to the mikveh. She has to make sure there's no chatzitza on her body. There's going to be rules d'oraisa that's going to mess up that mikveh. And there's going to be rules d'rabbanon to make sure that she never gets messed up. So what's d'oraisa and what's d'rabbanon? D'oraisa, you require 2 factors. It's called rubo and makpid. Rubo and makpid. This board is covered with things. But rove and makpid. Rove means it covers most. Makpid means that she's particular about it. She doesn't want it there. So it has, for a problem, d'oraisa has to cover most, and she has to be particular about it. If it doesn't cover most, even if she's particular about it, it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't cover most. And if she's not particular about it, then even if it covers most, apparently that's fine, d'oraisa. Comes along, d'rabbanan. The gazru, they made a gzera, al rubay she'enoi makpid. If it does cover most of her body, but she's not particular about it, they said, d'oraisa, that's fine. Midrabbanan, they said, no, that's not okay. Because it's covering most. Mishum rubay makpid, because it's covering most, and where it goes there, because there could be situations where she is particular about it, and it's covering most of her body. So we don't want her to go to the mikveh when she's covered, when most of her has this chatzitza, even if she's not makpid, because lahais is covering most of her. And there could be other women or other situations, but she would be makpid, and that would really ruin it. Ve'al mi'uto ha-makpid, and if she is particular about something, but it's only covering a minority, so we're gozer on that, that it's no good mitirabbanon, mishim ruva ha-makpid, for situations where she's makpid and it covers most. So Gemara says, v'lik zonami al mi'uto she'ino makpid, mishim mi'uto ha-makpid. So once you're doing that, why don't you make a gzeira and say, well, let's say that it's covering a minority, and she isn't even makpid. It's covering a minority, and she isn't even makpid. So, doesn't seem to be so bad. Why don't you go around that? Why should she be goes around that? She needs to do a makpid. Because let's say it does cover part of her body, and she is makpid on it. So we send midrabbanan, that's going to kill the tefillah. So why shouldn't we be going there even on miyot she'eno makpid? Because of miyot ha-makpid. My answer is, or alternatively the opposite, inami, mishim rubo she'eno makpid. If it does cover most of her body and she's not makpid, we should be kegzer for that too. So Gemara, okay, so we have to think that through. I know it's too hard to think about that like on the cuff. We'll have to think that through. So if we never say our time, it would be great to just work it out. But that's the translation. The starting point of Gemara is, you need 2 factors to be a problem d'oraisa. Midrabbanan, one of the two. And the question of Gemara is, well, why don't you have a case where midrabbanan would go to where it's neither of the two for when it's going to case one of the two? Gemara says, we don't do that, ever. Higuva gzeira. Because when you only have 1 factor, that's d'rabbanan, that it's no good. Higuva gzeira. Because that in and of itself, when there's only 1 factor present, is a gzeira midrabbanan. Anan, and we, Nikum, will get up. V'nigzar gzeira l'gzeira, and make a gzeira on another gzeira? Absolutely not. We don't do that. So we'll go over that in Seder time next week. But that's the basic gist. So just to finish it, the last point is straightforward. The Gemara says, Mechitzin, how can you say that Mechitza is Halacha Moshe Sinai? Mechitzin, okay, I'm with you. That's what we just finished saying. That a mechitza is a lach l'moshe mi'sinai. That's what Rabbi Yehuda said. Right back to Rabbi Yehuda, right? That in terms of walls of the sukkah or anything else, on Shabbos, whatever, mechitza, a domain. So that's halacha Moshe Sinai that it has to be 10 tefachim. Where it says, ha'nichal Rebbe Yehuda, very nice. It's halacha Moshe Sinai according to Yehuda, but el the Rebbe Meir, who said that you learn it out from the Aron and the Kaparis and all those things, so that it's not halacha Moshe Sinai, ma'ayikal amem, what are you going to say? How could it be that a mechitza is halacha Moshe Sinai? My answer is very simply, ki asayho chasa, when comes halacha Moshe Sinai, is not to teach you 10 tefachim, according to Rebbe Meir, is to teach you good, the lovud, the doifan akuma. All three of which we have discussed a little bit. Good, if you remember, was good asik mechitza, that you can have on a virtual wall that goes up, that's called good. Good, it could go up or it could go down, but that means a virtual wall is considered a mechitza, halacha Moshe Sinai. Lavud, if you remember, that's when something's within three tefachim, it's considered connected. Our case was when you have the floor, you make a hole, you can dip in the floor, it has to be lavud to the wall to be considered part of the wall. And finally, dofen akuma, and the bent wall, or the roof, where we can't consider the roof to be part of the wall, that's also part of the wall, so it's a mechitza. Those three things, good, that you can have a virtual wall, that you consider things connected when they're within three tefachim, and that you can consider less than four amos of a ceiling to be considered part of the wall, are all halachos in mechitza. And those are all halacha, lamoshe, misina.
Sure.
That's it. Okay, everybody, we're going to wait for a few minutes. Hopefully Rabbi Penner will be here soon, and Rabbi Zari is going to come in, Mirza Shem, around 12:30.